E, kaj pa je to?
Ja, kultivator.
Gre za neko vrsto apatije.
To lahko reče samo kreten, noben drug.
Socialni invalid in ga je nemogoče urejati.
Drugi kandidat.
Pa pije, kadi, masturbira, vse kako niso lahko počeli. Nihče tega ne ve.
Vsak petek skultiviramo dogodek tedna.
Lahko po kriterijih Radio Študent, težko pa po evropskih kriterijih.
Ampak na drug način, kot vi tu mislite.
Kultivator vedno užge.
Da pač nekdo sploh omenja probleme, ki so, in da pač sploh nekdo sproži dogajanje v družbi.
To drži. Drži.
Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what the other has to say.
Pozdravljeni v današnjem kultivatorju, v katerem se bomo posvetili proračunskemu zakonu Združenih držav Amerike, ki ga je ameriški predsednik Donald Trump podpisal prejšnji teden. Veliki, čudoviti zakon podaljšuje Trumpove davčne olajšave iz leta 2017 za premožnejše, uvaja strožje pogoje za pridobitev zdravstvenega zavarovanja za gospodinstva z nizkimi dohodki in strožje pogoje za pomoč v obliki bonov za hrano. Obenem pa nameni 150 milijard dolarjev za vojsko in oboroževanje ter več kot 30 milijard dolarjev za urad za imigracijo in carine, bolje znan kot ICE. Za analizo proračunskega zakona je z mano Tim iz aktualno politične redakcije.
Ja, živijo še z moje strani. Torej, sam zakon je v bistvu zelo obsežen, ampak v bistvu so glavne tri točke točno te, ki si omenil. Se pravi, da podaljša nekatere davčne olajšave iz leta 2017, določi nove davčne olajšave in pa uvede neke reze v socialne storitve, kot je pač zdravstveno zavarovanje. Zakon je v bistvu obsega 887 strani in ga je predsednik Trump podpisal 4. julija, kar je v bistvu rok, ki si ga je sam določil. Nobenega roka ni bilo, dokdaj mora biti to sprejeto, ampak on je želel za dan državnosti v Ameriki podpisati to pač prav ta zakon. In spodnji dom parlamenta je že konec maja potrdil prvotno verzijo zakona. Glasovali so z 215 glasovi za in 214 glasovi proti, čeprav je razmerje moči v spodnjem domu ameriškega kongresa malo drugačno, se pravi 220 republikancev in 212 demokratov. To pomeni, da sta med samim glasovanjem dva republikanca preskočila na demokratsko stran, enega republikanca ni bilo, dva pa nista glasovala. Potem je šla ta potrjena verzija zakona v zgornji dom parlamenta oziroma senat. Tam je 50, v bistvu je bilo najprej razmerje izenačeno, se pravi je 50 republikancev glasovalo za in 50 demokratov in tudi dva oziroma trije republikanski senatorji, in sicer Tom Tillis iz Severne Karoline, Rand Paul iz Kentuckyja in Susan Collins iz Maina, ki so glasovali proti. In z 50 glasovi za in 50 glasovi proti je imel odločilni glas podpredsednik Amerike, se pravi J.D. Vance. Kaj je senat spremenil oziroma kakšne nekatere razlike v primerjavi z spodnjim domom parlamenta, je, da se je podvojil sklad za bolnišnice na podeželju, da je odpravil prepoved oskrbe za potrditev spola v okviru programa Medicaid in pa tudi isto pravzaprav odpravil to prepoved v programih zdravstvenega zavarovanja za otroke. Ta oblika zakona je bila potem poslana nazaj v spodnji dom, ki ga je z 218 glasovi za potem tudi sprejel.
Ampak senat je zakon sprejel po nekem čisto drugem postopku kot po navadi.
Ja, torej ta zakon je v bistvu drugače se mu reče. Reče se mu budget reconciliation bill. In republikanci so v senatu ta zakon sprejeli z pač to zakonodajno bližnico, ki pravzaprav vladajoči stranki, se pravi republikanski, dovoljuje sprejetje sprememb za zgolj preprosto večino. In to ni neobičajen postopek, pač tudi demokrati so ga uporabljali recimo za sprejetje zakona o zmanjšanju inflacije leta 2022, se pravi Inflation Reduction Act, takrat pod demokratskim predsednikom Joe'em Bidenom. Republikanci pa so ga uporabili leta 2017 za ta večkrat omenjeni zakon, se pravi Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Potem pa so te zakoni, v bistvu, ki so sprejeti po tem postopku, se lahko uporabljajo zgolj za neke proračunske in pa fiskalne zadeve in ne smejo posegati v programe socialne varnosti, ne smejo posegati v Medicare in še v nekatere druge zadeve. In zato, da se to ne zgodi, obstaja neka varovalka in sicer se ji reče po angleščini the parliamentarian oziroma pač v slovenščini nekega neposrednega prevoda, približno pa bi se prevedlo v parlamentarist. Torej, to telo preveri in izloči, katere zadeve pač lahko sodijo v takšen zakon in katere ne. In po tem postopku, se pravi pač reconciliation bill, pač tej bližnici, imajo v senatu samo 20 ur za debato o zakonu, zakon pa se, kot rečeno, pač sprejme samo za navadno večino in ne za absolutno, ki bi bila zahtevna oziroma zahtevana, če bi demokrati vložili filibuster in ja, do tega ni prišlo, no, ampak pač več pa o tem, kako je bil sam zakon sprejet, pa pove David Griscom, ki je voditelj podcasta The Left Reckoning.
Reconciliation, without getting into all of the minutia of American politics and then political history, reconciliation is a way for budgets to go through divided Congress, right? And the idea is that there's kind of limits and it's a time limit on how long certain provisions can be put in place. There's also limits about spending and a whole host of other rules around it. Now, this bill is so broad and so large, it is not the kind of thing that would typically be passed under reconciliation. But what the Republicans did was they used an accounting trick, be able to argue that, no, they've looked at it and this bill does fit under the rules of reconciliation and they do not need to consult the parliamentarian. And again, I don't want to bore everybody with all the minutiae of American politics, but this is a very important thing because the parliamentarian is basically a nonpartisan entity in the U.S. Congress that will look at activities of Congress and sort of rule one way or the other. This is constitutional or this is unconstitutional. And there's been a lot of arguments on the progressive side, for example, about maybe it's time to start challenging the authority of the parliamentarian, but that didn't happen under the Biden administration. But the Republicans did, and they basically, they didn't just challenge the parliamentarian. They said, oh, they declined to have the parliamentarian look into this bill. So that's how it was able to get through using this reconciliation process. And, you know, really what it shows and what is worth understanding about the big, beautiful bill, as they're calling it, in the Republican Party right now, is that they're very willing to use all kinds of parliamentary tricks and tactics to get what they want. And because, you know, the way American politics is sort of set up right now, they don't really fear too much opposition for the Democratic Party.
Greva zdaj na samo vsebino zakona. Večkrat si omenil tim, da se podaljšajo davčne olajšave iz leta 2017. Za kakšne olajšave točno gre?
Ja, torej konec decembra leta 2017 je v svojem prvem mandatu takrat Trump podpisal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, ki pa je stopil v veljavo leta 2018. V okviru tega zakona je zmanjšal davke za skoraj vse davkoplačevalce, zlasti pa tiste z višjimi dohodninami. In zdaj večina davčnih olajšav bi se končala leta 2025, za nekatere korporacije, mislim davčne olajšave za korporacije in pa za podjetja, pa bi se iztekla leta 2028. In zdaj Kongresni proračunski urad, znan tudi kot CBO, ki je nek nestrankarski urad oziroma pač nek deluje znotraj kongresa, no vseeno, je ocenil, da bi podaljšanje teh olajšav povečalo državni primanjkljaj za več kot 4 bilijone in pol dolarjev. In zdaj zvezna dohodninska stopnja za prvi okvir oziroma za ta prvi tako imenovani bracket davčni ostane enaka, za sedmi, torej najvišji, pa se spusti za 39,6 na 37, če bi se te davčne olajšave, ki jih je Trump uvedel leta 2017, iztekle. In te Trumpove davčne olajšave komentira Griscom.
The tax cuts are some of the largest tax cuts for the wealthy in American history, and they have resulted in a significant transfer of wealth to the top 10% of income earners in the United States. They were set to expire. You know, it was another one of these bills that was set to go on for a decade. Most of the provisions in this bill, by the way, you know, aren't going to go into effect until after the U.S. midterms in 2026. So, you know, the Trump tax cuts were extremely deep cuts on the amount of money that people on the higher end of the wage spectrum were paying, and very, very marginal cuts for people on the lower end of the wage spectrum. So it increases. So it makes those effectively permanent, and then it increases the amount of tax cuts that are going to the super wealthy. To give an example of just how extreme some of this stuff is, there was a provision where private jets could be ripped off as a tax expense under the 2017 tax cuts. This bill makes those permanent. So in a lot of ways, it's really entrenching the kind of privilege and power of the super wealthy.
Zakon potem podaljša te davčne olajšave in verjetno uvede tudi veliko novih.
Ja. Torej, neka ta olajšava za davek na nepremičnine, recimo, se bo zvišala na $15 milijonov, medtem ko se recimo standardna olajšava za posameznike zviša za $1000, za poročene pare pa za $2000.
Kaj pa misliš s tem standardna olajšava?
V bistvu, ja, ta standardna olajšava pomeni znesek oziroma zmanjša znesek dohodka davčnega zavezanca, ki je obdavčen, kar pomeni, da zmanjša znesek davka, ki ga mora potem posameznik plačati. Uvedeni so pa tudi neke nove davčne olajšave, kot recimo za starejše od 65 let in pa tudi olajšave za kredite na avte izdelane v Združenih državah. Trump je uvedel tudi tako imenovane Trumpove račune, kar pomeni, da pač v bistvu za otroke rojene med leti 2025 in 2028, ko se Trumpov mandat izteče, se bo za vse te otroke v bistvu uložilo $1000 na njihov račun. So pa nekateri davki oziroma te davčne olajšave precej zanimive, in sicer davek na napitnine oziroma davčna olajšava na napitnine in pa na nadure. Torej, obstajajo neke določbe, ki veljajo samo do leta 2028, in sicer pri napitninah gre za posameznike, ki pač opravljajo neke poklice, za katere so ponavadi pač dobijo tudi napitnine, in te poklice mora opredeliti kongres oziroma jih mora potrditi. In ti posamezniki lahko uveljavljajo posamezne davčne olajšave do $25,000, če na leto zaslužijo do $150,000. In pa v prvotni verziji zakona, ki jo je sprejel predstavniški dom, je v bistvu te omejitve do $25,000 ni bilo. Zdaj, druga stvar pa je ta davčna olajšava na nadure. In tukaj zakon v bistvu uvede olajšavo v vrednosti do $12,500 in se ta vrednost, ta olajšava se potem postopoma zmanjšuje za vse posameznike, ki služijo več kot $150,000. In ta olajšava velja samo za dodatno nadomestilo. To pomeni, da če nek delavec v restauraciji pač zasluži, ne vem, $8 na uro oziroma $10 na uro in potem za nadure mu plačajo $12 na uro, to pomeni, da se to dodatno nadomestilo šteje. Se pravi, ta davčna olajšava velja samo za ta dva dodatna dolarja na uro. Ne? Ampak zdaj, kar je zanimivo, je tudi to, da pač Trump je uvedel te davčne olajšave za napitnine, ker v bistvu pač to nekako služi zgolj kot nek, pač, kako bi rekel, pač nek bombonček, se pravi, pač podobno kot ko smo govorili o pokojninski reformi in o letnem dodatku, lahko govorimo tudi tukaj, da pač v bistvu, ker recimo tisti, ki delajo v strežbi in služijo na napitninah, predstavljajo zelo majhen odstotek ameriške populacije, okoli 2% so neke primerjave oziroma ocene, in to pomeni, da se te davčne olajšave veljajo samo za njih, kar pa je, kar pa tudi izpostavi potem Griskom, je to, da nekdo, ki pa dela v isti restauraciji, v kuhinji, pa potem ne, nima, ni, v bistvu, ni, nima dostopa oziroma ne more uveljavljati te davčne olajšave, čeprav sta pri istem delodajemalcu, samo zato, ker pač dela v kuhinji.
People know the things like the no tax on overtime or tips, and you can see why this might seem like, oh, look, they're throwing a bone to work-class Americans. I think a couple things are important to know here. One, only 2%, I believe, of American workers receive tips in the first place. So this is a very small part of the population. And Trump is not just a businessman, but don't forget, he was somebody who worked in hotels and in entertainment. You know, somebody who was a failed, you know, casino owner. You know, right, so he understands how the tip industry kind of works in the United States. And it's not an accident that Nevada, which is a very important swing state in the lip election, was a big part of the reason why he was talking about no tax on tips for people who are working in the gambling industry, in particular in that state, maybe consider showing up and voting for Donald Trump. So it's a very small part of the population that will be getting this benefit. And also, you know, it's kind of arbitrary if you think about it, right? You know, why should a waiter or a bartender, you know, get a pretty significant tax cut versus somebody who, let's say, working in the kitchen in the same restaurant, right? So it's a targeted, very particular group of people who are getting this cut. And overtime as well. You know, overtime is you know, they're going to have, you know, the cuts on overtime. And, you know, there are a lot of Americans who are overworked. But if people know much about, like, large America corporations, you know, companies like Walmart and major employers like that actually don't tend to give out overtime to their workers because there are federal provisions that require overtime work, you know, to be paid at a higher rate. So again, like, there will be some people who will benefit from it, but it's a small, small, small fraction of the general working class population. And I think more than anything, as in terms of it being like effective in sort of making sure that people are keeping more money in their pockets, it's something for them to maybe point to on the campaign trail.
Je še kaj podobnega v zakonu, kakšna poteza, s katero si želi Trump na svojo stran pridobiti čim več voljivcev?
Ja, zdaj v zakonu je več določb, ki so jih sprejeli na zahtevo enega ali pa drugega senatorja. To so pač določbe, ki so jih dodali naknadno. In to je zato, da bi se zagotovili njihovo podporo pri končnem glasovanju. Je pa noter tudi dvig olajšave za zvezni in pa lokalni davek. In ta davek, v bistvu, če ga razložimo, je pač prebivalci Združenih držav plačujejo davek tako sami zvezni državi, kot tudi mestu, v katerem živijo. In zvezne države, ki so pod nadzorom demokratov, imajo ponavadi ta davek višji kot zvezne države pod nadzorom republikancev. In Trumpov zakon iz leta 2017 je najvišjo vrednost davčne olajšave omejil na $10,000, po novem zakonu pa se ta omejitev dvigne na $40,000. In ta dvig omejitve pravzaprav zelo ustreza demokratskim zveznim državam in Griskom pojasni, da moramo v bistvu na ta dvig te omejitve gledati bolj v luči tega, da je New York na zadnjih predsedniških volitvah v bistvu zabeležil največ republikanskih volivcev od leta 1988. To pomeni, da je, mislim, da okoli 43% volivcev je glasovalo za Donalda Trumpa in to se ni zgodilo oziroma tak odstotek ni bil zabeležen vse od pač leta 88, ko sta se pomerila Michael Dukakis in pa George Bush še starejši.
We have a federal and a state system in the United States. Not only do you pay tax to the state, you pay tax to the city. And, you know, there's a pretty significant tax burden between, you know, living in a city like Austin, Texas, and in New York. Also, not shouldn't be surprising to folks, a lot of the people who do live in places like New York or in Los Angeles or San Francisco also tend to be people on the higher edge of the wage spectrum. So the state and local tax deduction is a way for people who are paying those higher taxes in typically democratically controlled states and cities to be able to not have that income count towards their federal tax burden, right? So it's a massive tax cut for people living in those areas. And it as you can imagine, it's a little bit of a political sticking point. American politics has become fairly regional in the sense of, you know, the map feels pretty set in a way. You know, the South is Republican, the Northeast is Democrat, the West Coast Democrat. And, you know, in American politics, there has been, you know, these kind of barbs that are thrown, you know, region to region by their representatives, be they Republicans or Democrats. So the state and local tax deduction is something that has been very controversial because many Republicans, want to punish people who live in New York to maybe encourage them to move to a Nashville or to a Dallas, so people who are making high wages to sort of get those people to come to these southern states or these lower tax states. So for a long time, the Republican Party was very much against, a lot of these kind of deductions. But they ended up increasing them from $10,000 to $40,000. Only temporarily, I believe. It was one of those things that was a little bit surprising, but because there have been gains of the Republican Party in areas like New York, right? They are trying to make a play, I believe, for voters in those areas.
Okay, torej so uvedli ful enih dodatnih davčnih olajšav in še nove. Kak pa mislijo vse to financirati?
Ja, sem pravi, v bistvu je pač tako nekak, da zaradi vseh teh velikih davčnih olajšav morajo nekje tudi prihraniti. Se pravi, za te storitve morajo nekje tudi najti denar. Se pravi, če se bi vrnila zdaj na poročilo CBO, je ta urad ocenil, da bo zakon državni dolg povečal za skoraj 4 bilijone dolarjev, ob tem pa, da zakon pa predvideva približno 4,5 bilijone dolarjev neto znižanje davkov. To in od tega največ prav za gospodinstva z visokimi prihodki in pa za podjetja. In zdaj Jack Rasmus, ki je doktor politične ekonomije, je napisal eno kratko poročilo, v katerem pač predstavi, da ameriška vlada, oziroma vse ameriške vlade med leti 2001 in 2024 so zmanjšale davke za državljane za okoli 17 bilijonov dolarjev, medtem ko se je državni dolg od leta 2000 zvišal z 5,6 bilijona na 36,2 bilijona dolarjev do konca decembra lani. In ta zakon, ta trenutni zakon, prihrani predvsem na račun programov socialne varnosti, torej z uvajanjem nekih strožjih pogojev za pridobivanje zdravstvenega zavarovanja za gospodinstva z nizkimi prihodki, znanega tudi kot Medicaid, ki ni, v bistvu se ne enači za Medicare, in pa za pomoč v obliki bonov za hrano, znano kot program dopolnilne prehrambene pomoči ali preprosto je SNAP. In iz tega vsega je jasno, kar pove tudi sogovornik, da zakon najbolj prizadane prav delavce.
First of all, I just wanted to make it as clear as possible to anybody listening. You know, we're talking people in the United States, you know, the CBO has looked at this bill, right? The CBO is the Congressional Budget Office, and this is a nonpartisan organization, that federal organization that looks at any kind of spending that's going through the government, and, you know, they give it a score, right? And this is supposed to be, you know, just kind of like neutral arbiters of fact. And what they have found from this bill is that working class Americans, people on the lower end of the wage spectrum, are going to see significant cuts to their income. People on the lower spectrum, we're talking about people who make $10,000 a year or less, I believe it's like $560 less that people will have in their pockets at the end of the year because of this bill. So again, it is very, very punitive against poor folks.
Kaj konkretno pa so ti pogoji, ki otežujejo dostop do Medicaida?
Ja, torej za začetek morajo vse zvezne države preveriti upravičenost prijaviteljev do zavarovanja na vsakih 6 mesecev in ne pa na vsako leto, kot je to veljalo do zdaj. Potem morajo zahtevati več papirologije oziroma neke birokracije in pa uvedli so še dodatne pogoje v povezavi z delom oziroma nekimi pogoji, ki jih moraš izpolnjevati na delovnem mestu in tako. Samo temi tremi določili, pa bi vlada oziroma pač Združene države Amerike prihranile več kot 450 milijard, vsega skupaj pa bi na račun gospodinstvo pa z najnižjimi dohodki prihranili skoraj 900 milijard dolarjev. In s temi spremembami bi skoraj 12 milijonov ljudi izgubilo dostop do zdravstvenega zavarovanja, več pa pove Griskom.
A lot of people are very much tied to their employer. Their employer doesn't just control their wage, they also control their access to healthcare. because most people get insurance through their employer. Now, Medicaid is a provision which is different from Medicare. And I know this is confusing, but Medicare is basically a provision for elderly Americans to make sure that elderly Americans do have health care. And Medicaid is set up for the poor and for children and for people on disability. Medicaid is a federal program, but it is administered by the states. And what this bill does is it cuts into the Medicaid budget so immensely that they are talking that around 12 million people in the United States are going to lose their health insurance as a result of this bill. Now, part of that is from straight up budget cuts to Medicaid. But another aspect of this is that the bill puts in work requirements to have access to Medicaid. And while that might, you know, to some folks sound reasonable, right, that people have to work at least 40 hours a month to get access to this, this is one of those things where the paperwork burden on people who are trying to prove that they're working 40 hours a week will be immense. So even though the requirements that are put into place are already fairly onerous and difficult for people who might be disabled, who might not be able to work for a multitude of reasons, fact of the matter is that even people who might be eligible under the provisions in this law, right, eligible under the arguments that we're getting from the Republican Party about who should and should not be eligible for these programs, many, many people are going to lose their health coverage, even if they were eligible by the letter of the law because of, you know, bureaucratic oversight, missing of a filing deadline. I can't remember off the top of my head how often they're supposed to be reporting their work, how many hours a month they're working to the government. But I believe it's something like quarterly. So this is something that will constantly people have this kind of threat over their head that they might be losing their health insurance if, you know, for whatever reason, they're not able to work so much in a month or, you know, because of bureaucratic oversight. So this is something that's going to, you know, is going to be devastating.
Zakon pa vseeno nameni veliko financiranja za podeželske bolnišnice.
Ja, se pravi, senatorji so prvotni sklad, ki ga je potrdil predstavniški dom, v višini 25 milijard dolarjev podvojili in bo sedaj pač vreden okoli 50 milijard dolarjev, ki bo namenjen prav za podeželske bolnišnice. Zdaj sogovornik pojasni, da prav pač v teh bolnišnicah, ki so ponavadi v malce pač bolj revnih predelih, zračune za zdravstveno oskrbo najpogosteje plača pač Medicaid. In ker gre pač tukaj za revna območja, ki in Medicaid je namenjen pač predvsem za ljudi z najnižjimi dohodki in ker Združene države Amerike režejo financiranje za to organizacijo, bo v bistvu ta sklad deloval bolj kot ne pač neko bližnjo rano.
The cuts on Medicaid that the Trump administration and the Republican Party are doing are just massive. It really is hard to overstate how historic these cuts to Medicaid are. And I bring that up because it directly affects rural hospitals. So in the United States, most rural hospitals, the primary payer of hospital bills for rural hospitals in the United States is Medicaid. And that should be surprising to folks who know much about the United States. Rural areas are the poorest parts of the country. I mean, you know, you have regions of the country, the Dakotas and the New Mexico, you know, that like the poverty rate is as high as it is in developing countries. I mean, America is an extremely unequal country. And these rural hospitals, it's very difficult for them to stay open. For the past 30 years, the United States has been suffering through what is known as like a great crisis in rural healthcare. And it's because rural hospitals cannot stay open. It's very difficult for them to be profitable because they're serving very, very poor people. And cutting Medicaid for so many millions of people is only going to lower the amount of money that goes into these hospitals, right? And many of these hospitals are not profit organizations, but they still operate, you know, on a cash basis. They need money to come into them for them to stay open. So this $50 billion hospital fund might sound large, but is so small compared to the cuts that are going into Medicaid. And the $50 billion is really a band-aid on top of a huge gash that the Republican Party did to working at class and rural America.
Kako pa je potem s programom SNAP?
Ja, ta program zagotavlja mesečna sredstva za nakup živil in takšne bone za hrano zagotavlja za več kot 40 milijonov ljudi. In po različnih ocenah bi dostop do bonov zaradi novih strožjih pogojev izgubila polovica tega, se pravi okoli 22 milijonov ljudi. Zdaj, vlada bi še naprej v celoti financirala dajatve za države, v kateri bi bila stopnja napak pri plačilih nižja od 6%. Države z višjo stopnjo kot pač 6% pa bi krile od 5-15% vseh stroškov programa. Zdaj, kaj je ta stopnja napak? To je neko merilo za natančnost določanja upravičenosti in potem prejemkov v posameznih zveznih državah. Se pravi, kdo so zares te upravičenci in koliko prejemkov potem dobivajo. Ne? In zdaj samo za pač ponazoritev tega primera, se pravi, ta zakon predvideva, da bi financirali samo za tiste zvezne države, v katerih bi bila stopnja napak manjša od 6%. Takšnih zveznih držav je bilo v lanskem letu, v lanskem fiskalnem letu samo 7 in povprečna stopnja napak v Združenih državah Amerike za vseh 50 zveznih držav je bila 10,93%. Tako da kaj bi zares teh manj sredstev pomenil za vse te ljudi, ki bi to izgubili, pa komentira sogovornik.
SNAP is a supplemental nutrition assistance program, kind of colloquially known as food stamps, right? It's food assistance to poor and working class families. What we're going to see is significant changes and cuts into that as well. And, you know, people, you know, America has a reputation of being a very wealthy country, but a lot of families still struggle to put food on the table. 40 million people use SNAP, and the cuts that are going to this program and the requirements around it are going to be devastating are going to mean that there will be hungry kids, so there will be hungry families. And, you know, America already has a hunger crisis. So this is something that is only going to amplify that reality.
Zelo veliko sredstev bo pa tudi namenjenih za vojsko?
Ja, za vojsko bo namenjenih okoli 150 milijard dolarjev, od tega 30 milijard za dodatno financiranje ladjedelstva, torej pač vojnih ladij, več kot 20 milijard dolarjev za sisteme zračne obrambe in pa protiraketne sisteme, ter skoraj 25 milijard dolarjev za strelivo in pa za vojaške baze. Zdaj, to je pač teh sredstev je več, recimo tudi še za zato da je vojska v stalni pripravljenosti za različne sporazume in podobno. Tako da ta sredstva se zelo porazdelijo. Bo pa velik del sredstev prejela tudi namenjenih tudi tako pač, v bistvu boju proti nezakonitim migracijam, pač, kot bi jim rekel Trumpa, ne? Se pravi, nekak 45 milijard dolarjev bo namenjenih za povečanje prostorov za pridržane migrante. In tukaj je pač po nekih ocenah, ki jih je navedel, mislim, da CBS, gre bi lahko s takim denarjem ICE, se pravi ta urad za migracije in carine, pač povečal oziroma zadržal več kot 100 tisoč pripornikov, kar bi dejansko približno podvojilo sedanje zmogljivosti. No in od tega bo, se pravi, ne vem, za migracije oziroma za pač to Trumpovo bitko, bo namenjenih tudi 45 milijard dolarjev za izgradnjo zidu, najverjetneje pač na južni meji z Mehiko, in okoli 30 milijard dolarjev za financiranje ICE-a. ICE je imel do letos, oziroma pač to še pred nekaj dnevi, je imel proračun vreden okoli 8 milijard dolarjev. Teh 30 milijard dolarjev bo pomenil, da bo agencija oziroma ta urad kar naenkrat postal eden največjih v Združenih državah in bodo lahko sredstva porabili tako za več osebja kot za modernizacijo in to pomeni, da se bo ta Trumpov boj v bistvu proti migrantom, ne nazadnje smo videli na začetku junija, kako so izvajali racije proti, v katerih so pridržali številne pač nedokumentirane migrante in kako je potem prišlo do protestov v Los Angelesu in San Francisco Francisku in tudi številnih drugih mestih, da se bo ta misija Trumpova in pa izvajanje deportacij lahko samo še nadaljevala. Potem pa uvaja še nekatere druge spremembe na področju migracije. Recimo primer je, da bodo morali azilanti oziroma ti, ki bi prišli v državo in zaprosili za azil, morali za to prošnjo plačati $100 in za vsako leto, ko bi čakali na odobritev oziroma zavrnitev azila, bi morali plačati dodatnih $100.
Uf, ok. Kako pa so se na sprejetje tega zakona odzvali potem demokrati?
Ja, bi pričakoval, da v bistvu glede na vse spremembe, ki jih zakon uvaja in kako napada tiste z najnižjimi dohodki in kako napada pač, ne vem, migrante v tem primeru in dodatno troši na vojski in oboroževanju, da bi nasprotna opozicijska stranka se nekako resneje odzvala, ampak vodja demokratov v senatu, se pravi vodja manjšine v senatu, je eno edinih sprememb amandmajev zakona, ki je naredil, je, da je oziroma ki jo je vložil, ker na koncu amandma ni bil sprejet, je, da se zakon, ki je imenovan pač zelo skromno The Big Beautiful Bill, da se ga preimenuje v pač nekaj The Legislation, nekaj podobnega. Skratka, od vseh možnih amandmajev za spremembo davčnih olajšav in podobno, se odločili samo za preimenovanje zakona.
This is a bill that is going to fundamentally alter, you know, the United States of America's future. And you have to ask yourself, where is the opposition party? In addition to many of the things that are being cut and the things that the Republican Party is doing, you know, being the antithesis of the things that the Democrats say that they want to do when they're in power, a lot of these programs, you know, are part of the Democratic Party's legacy, be it FDR or LBJ, right? We are seeing some of those programs be cut to such a degree that they might disappear. So you would wonder, where are they? And it has been very frustrating to watch the weakness of the Democratic Party in pushing back against this bill. Now, in fairness, the way that the Republican Party has been doing politics, right, there are a lot of limitations as to what the Democratic Party can do in office. But most Americans don't understand the scope and scale of this bill. Most Americans don't know about the Medicaid cuts. They don't know about the SNAP cuts. They don't know about how much money this is going to put into the wealthy's pocket. There's plenty of polling on this that most people are completely ignorant about this bill. And that responsibility to educate, to make this into a major political issue, that falls on the Democratic Party. And from my sources in Washington and many people that I've been speaking with, the strategy of the Democratic Party now is that this bill is going to be such a disaster and harm so many people that will help the Democrats reclaim hour in 2028, which is a very dangerous strategy, one because of the human cost of letting a bill like this go through without putting up much opposition, and two, because there's no real guarantee that people will associate this bill necessarily with Donald Trump. If you didn't do the job when you were in office of associating the Republican Party with all this damage.
Okay. Če na hitar še povzamemo, kaj se je v bistvu zgodilo, se pravi, Trump je podpisal zakon, za katerega pravi, da je največja zmaga za delavstvo in za srednji razred v bistvu od ustanovitve Amerike. Tako da, ja, se pravi, ta zakon nekako predvideva in uvaja številne nove davčne olajšave za predvsem premožnejše in podaljšuje davčne olajšave, ki jih je Trump že tako ali tako sprejel leta 2017. In vse to pač pravi on, da je za zmago delavstva, ampak pravzaprav pač vidimo, da so prav tisti, ki najbolj, v bistvu bodo najbolj morali plačati, bodo največ izgubili in ki bodo ob, recimo, zdravstveno zavarovanje in ki bodo ob bone za hrano, ta zakon je nasprotje tega in še naprej v bistvu povečuje razlike in prioritizira bogatstvo 1% najbogatejših Američanov, tako da ja.
Kultivirala sva Mitja in Tim.